Picture yourself at a dinner party, listening to a friend describe how they gave money to a homeless person. Notice how the story emphasizes their generosity, perhaps glosses over the amount, and conveniently omits that they just passed three other people without stopping. Now flip the script. When you tell stories about your own kindness, don't you do the same thing? We all do. And here's the unsettling truth. We're not consciously lying. We genuinely believe our edited versions of reality. Between 1963 and 1974, four biologists revolutionized our understanding of why we behave this way. Hamilton, Williams, Trivers, and Smith created a framework showing that our deepest motivations, love, friendship, morality itself, operate by hidden evolutionary logic we rarely perceive. Natural selection didn't just shape our bodies. It built our minds as sophisticated social machines designed to navigate a world of competing genetic interests. The most brilliant trick? It concealed this machinery from our conscious awareness, making us splendid in our moral equipment, tragic in our propensity to misuse it, and pathetic in our constitutional ignorance of this misuse. Why do men swipe right indiscriminately while women carefully evaluate each profile? The answer lies in parental investment. Women's minimum biological investment, 9 months of pregnancy, childbirth, nursing, vastly exceeds men's few minutes of effort. This asymmetry created fundamentally different mating strategies over millions of years. The evidence spans cultures and species. Even in sexually permissive societies, men pursue women and offer gifts for sexual access, never the reverse. The theory predicts its own exceptions. In seahorses, where males carry offspring, sex roles reverse completely. Females compete while males choose carefully. When our ancestors moved to the savannah, larger brains created a crisis. Bigger heads but narrower birth canals forced earlier births, producing helpless infants. Natural selection translated these pressures into emotions, both parental love and romantic attraction. Marriage exists in every known human culture, and fathers universally love their children, unlike chimpanzee fathers who don't recognize their offspring. Men employ a dual strategy, opportunistic about casual sex, yet highly selective about long-term partners. Research confirms both genders wanted average intelligence for dating and above average for marriage. For purely sexual encounters, women raised their standards, while men dropped theirs dramatically. Men differentiate between women they'd merely sleep with versus those they'd invest in, eager and undiscriminatory toward the former, nearly as choosy as women toward the latter. Why would male-dominated societies outlaw polygamy? Marriage systems reflect power struggles among men, not between genders. In subsistence societies, dividing resources among multiple families risks having no surviving children. In stratified societies, wealthy men could support multiple wives, creating unexpected consequences. Counterintuitively, monogamy benefits most men while polygyny favors most women. Consider 1,000 people ranked by desirability. Polygyny allows attractive women to marry up by sharing wealthy men rather than settling for poorer ones. Most women improve their situation, while many men lose access to mates entirely. Institutionalized monogamy represents a compromise among men of different status. Extreme polygyny correlates with extreme political hierarchy, despotic rulers monopolizing hundreds of women. As political power distributed more equally through democracy, so did access to wives. The strongest practical argument for monogamy? Safety. Unmarried men are 3 times more likely to murder than married men. Without mates, men compete ferociously through violence and risky behavior. Modern America's serial monogamy, where wealthy men monopolize multiple women's reproductive years sequentially, has recreated this scarcity, potentially contributing to social problems. Charles Darwin approached marriage scientifically, creating 2 columns, marry and not marry, weighing companionship against freedom. His pro-marriage arguments included constant companion and friend in old age, adding, better than a dog anyhow. His choice of Emma Wedgwood seems puzzling. She was older and not considered beautiful, but Emma possessed qualities making her an excellent mother: intelligence, trustworthiness, and sturdy character. Their marriage succeeded for revealing reasons. Darwin's chronic illness made him dependent on Emma's care. His Victorian view of women as spiritual saviors kept him appreciative. Rural isolation limited temptations. Numerous children provided fulfilling investment. Darwin's systematic approach, deciding rationally to marry, finding someone compatible, committing fully, may seem emotionally empty, but proved remarkably effective. Lasting love requires will, not just passion. While initial ardor fades, marriages thrive on respect, compatibility, affection, and determination. For over a decade, Darwin puzzled over how natural selection could produce sterile worker bees that sacrifice everything without reproducing. The answer would explain why siblings both love and fight, and why parents grieve differently for different children. William Hamilton's breakthrough viewed evolution from the genes perspective. A ground squirrel's alarm call makes sense if it saves relatives who likely carry the same gene. His formula shows self-sacrifice genes spread when the cost is less than the benefit multiplied by relatedness. Since siblings share half their genes, sacrificing oneself can ensure genetic survival through relatives. This explains how genes for love evolved, but also reveals love's limits. JBS Haldane joked he'd die for two brothers or eight cousins, mathematical truth revealing how genetic self-interest constrains familial love. Parents unconsciously allocate resources to maximize genetic returns. Historically, upper-class families favored sons who could leverage status for reproductive success, while lower-class families invested more in daughters. Modern research confirms affluent women breastfeed sons more than daughters, while low-income women show opposite patterns. Parental grief follows evolutionary logic with uncomfortable precision. It peaks just before adolescence, then gradually declines. When Darwin's infant daughter Mary Eleanor died at 3 weeks, he and Emma recovered quickly. 10-year-old Annie's death devastated him permanently, exactly as evolutionary theory predicts. Game theory exposes friendship's evolutionary foundation. Cooperation benefits both parties, but temptation to cheat persists. Reciprocal altruism works when cooperation yields greater total benefit than competition. When a chimp shares meat, the hungry recipient gains more than the giver loses. If reciprocated later, both win. Natural selection installed emotions to implement the strategy. Sympathy prompts cooperation. Gratitude ensures returned favors. Anger cuts off cheaters. Forgiveness allows renewed cooperation. Consistent helpfulness generates affection and trust, friendship's essence, allowing us to lower our guard. The uncomfortable truth, our noblest impulses are genetic strategies. Sympathy increases with others' desperation because greater need creates larger IOUs. Guilt correlates with likelihood of getting caught rather than wrongdoing severity. Subjects who believed they'd broken expensive equipment volunteered for painful experiments, but only if the damage had been discovered. The most dispiriting aspect? Our gene's goal isn't helping others, but creating the impression we've helped. This explains secret betrayals, reputation management, and hypocrisy. Our discomfort passing homeless people intensifies with eye contact, suggesting we care less about not giving than about being seen not giving. Deception pervades nature. Fireflies mimic mating flashes. Orchids resemble wasps. Harmless snakes display poisonous coloration. Humans deceive differently. We believe our own performances. We deceive ourselves to deceive others better. If detecting deception is valuable, hiding its telltale signs through genuine self-deception becomes equally valuable. Status-seeking operates as unconscious machinery. From childhood, we crave approval and fear ridicule. Evolutionary stakes were extremely unpopular individuals faced diminished survival and reproductive prospects. Laboratory experiments reveal unconscious moral self-justification. When subjects mistreated others, they subsequently derogated their victims, unconsciously deciding victims deserved it. This derogation disappeared when victims could retaliate, suggesting our moral accounting needs justification only for asymmetric exchanges. Our social accounting is fundamentally self-serving. we monitor what we're owed more vigilantly than what we owe. From epic wars to neighborly disputes, both sides maintain deep conviction in their righteousness. This unconscious bias functions like a bargaining strategy. Success in negotiation comes from appearing rigidly committed while maintaining hidden flexibility. Our brain operates like a skilled lawyer, instinctively organizing evidence to support its owner's position, regardless of objective truth. Darwin became the first organism to fully comprehend natural selection, then immediately rejected its central value of selfishness. His moral sentiments, though designed to serve genetic advantage, renounced this criterion once it became explicit. Understanding our evolutionary machinery paradoxically leads toward greater compassion by stripping self-absorption of its noble disguise. Recognizing that retributive impulses evolved for individual genetic advantage, not social good, makes them harder to accept uncritically. The new paradigm exposes the biological machinery behind our moral self-justifications. This awareness doesn't destroy morality. It liberates us to choose values consciously rather than being puppets of ancient genetic scripts. Your conscience will keep lying to you, but now at least you know when to doubt it.